religion. So just by way of letting you know how this meeting is going to work, I'm Monique Ingalls. I'm the co-chair of this section and the listserv moderator. That's Andrew Mall, who is the secretary, and we are going to be co-moderating this roundtable discussion today on ethnomusicology and religion, kind of looking past, present, and future. Got a committee that I'll introduce, roundtable participants I'll introduce in just a minute. And then about 45 or 50 minutes in, we'll bring the roundtable to a close. I know a lot of people, there are a lot of different meetings going on right now. I know people need to go, so that's totally fine if you if you need to slip out at that point. But please do, if you can, stay around. Our business meeting will be, I think, more exciting than your average section business meeting, because we are at the very beginning of things, and so you can shape the future of our section by, you know, for instance, opining on where the dues should go. I think I've had, a Scotch allowance, you know, has been proposed before the meeting, so if you'd like to stick around and propose things for that, that'd be great. But I will talk more about what our section's done in the past year in the business meeting, but I think we need to go ahead and, without any further ado, get started with the roundtable. Just very very briefly, by way of introduction, we have first off on my left here, Jeffers Engelhart. He is assistant professor of music at Amherst College. His research interests include music and religion and secularism, human rights and cultural rights, music and globalization, and he works on music in the Finno-Ugric world, particularly Estonia. He has a forthcoming monograph with Oxford University Press, Singing the Right Way, Orthodox Christians and the Secular Modern in Estonia. And then going further down, we've got Judah Cohen, who is Associate Professor of Musicology and Jewish Studies. Yep. At Indiana University. His research interests include music in Jewish life in the U.S. and the Caribbean and medical ethnomusicology, and his monograph from 2009 is The Making of a Reformed Jewish Cantor. Next down the line, we have Zoe Sherinian, who is associate professor and chair of ethnomusicology at the University of Oklahoma. She studies Tamil folk music, Christian indigenization, and indigenous theologies of liberation. Very exciting. She just had a book come out this summer, Tamil Folk Music as Liberation Theology. And she's also an accomplished percussionist and dancer. Going from, and our last panelist that's here this evening, Rich Jankowski, is the Associate Professor of Music and Ethnomusicology. He researches trance and healing, music in Islam, music of the Middle East and North Africa, and his monograph came out in 2010, is Stambeli, Music, Trance, and Alterity in Tunisia. So a great panel this evening. I hope Deborah Kapchen will also be able to join us. She said that she was getting in and might be a little bit late, so perhaps she'll join us in the middle. But with that, by the way of introduction, Andrew, if you'd like to launch us.
Is this retalk?
I think it might.
Yeah, another over here.
There are multiple microphones here. Okay,
sure.
I mean, just hold this one over there. I can share this mic with Rich and Zoe.
All right. Okay.
So again, thank you all for coming today. In preparation for this panel, for this roundtable, we did not ask the roundtable presenters to actually prepare anything. So instead, what we had done is Monique and I had brainstormed some questions, and I provided those questions to the panelists, so they maybe have been thinking about some of the issues present in these. It was a big, long set of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start off, you know, the title of the panel is On the Ethnomusicology of Religion, as Monique
said. And we want to address past contributions, present challenges, and future directions. So, I want to start off by asking if you guys have any contribution to, you know, what contributions have ethnomusicologists made to the study of religion, thinking more in terms of the past trajectories of what, you know, might be emerging right now as an area within the field of ethnomusicology.
or the past to the present?
Yeah. From the past to the present. It's good, too.
You don't have to start, Zoe. Yeah. That's okay.
It's the past part, though.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Rich, please.
Go ahead.
I can speak a bit to the contributions ethnomusicologists have made to the study of Islam, so not looking at the field of ethnomusicology as broadly. And I won't go too far into the past, but you know, up until the 60s and the 1970s, many scholars of music of Islam operated under the paradigm or the assumptions underlying Orientalism. And in fact, the music of Islam was often coterminous with music of the Middle East or even music of the Arab world. And, you know, sometimes the Orientalism went really far. Alan Lomax's Canto Metrics, you know, he understood the tense vocal aesthetic of Middle Eastern music to be illustrative of or a result of what he called the pain, fear, and erotic hysteria associated with Islamic society. But these assumptions that Islam sort of defined every aspect of culture in the region was shared by indigenous ethnomusicologists as well, or others who were sort of more complex subject positions. Lois Ibsen Al-Faruqi also looked at the entire world of music in the Arab world and defined them in terms of their relative permissibility in Islam and adhere to a sort of very sort of conservative view of music. But going into the 80s and the 90s, many ethnomusicologists worked in the relatively secular spheres of art music, of popular music. And so although they avoided quite often explicitly discussing these musics in terms of religion, they did paint a portrait of Muslims making music that were not defined in strictly Islamic terms. We saw some ethnographies of popular music, such as Algerian Rai, that provided more nuanced pictures of Islam in practice that show us why it's not necessarily a contradiction in terms to have lyrics in popular music about sex or drinking alongside lyrics that address making the Hajj, the pilgrimage to Mecca, or visiting a saint shrine, because all of these are part of the reality of lives for the people, for the audience. But it was really in the study of ritual where I think ethnomusicologists started to make a contribution that could be construed as sort of broadly applicable and useful to other sacred musics. And I'm thinking here of Regula Qureshi's Sufi music of India and Pakistan. And rather than resorting to medieval Sufi texts to explain, you know, contemporary Sufi practices, you know, they're so distant historically and geoculturally in many cases, and often aren't read by contemporary practitioners. Instead, she delves deeply into the context and contradictions of Islamic practice where, for instance, individual social status may clash with the presumed egalitarianism or the theoretical egalitarianism of Islam. And so Sufi Qawwalis, these musicians, who actually they are not Sufis, I take that back. They cannot be Sufis because of their caste position in Indian society. They mediate this. They sort of square the circle of sort of the social hierarchies of Indian society and that egalitarianism. So so that was a watershed movement that I think really spawned a trend in which, you know, ethnomusicological scholarship looked at Islam in practice as a complex polysemous sort of practice, and just a general insistence that Islam cannot be reduced to a singularity. And just as we've become confident in defining musics in the plural, we've also we also recognize a plurality of approaches to living Islam. I have much more I could say on that, but I'm going to cede the microphone.
Let me just add a little bit to that. From the perspective of South Asian ethnomusicology, so many of us have been dealing for, you know, really, at least since the 60s and 70s, with classical Hindu music, Carnatic music, Hindustani music. But the way we've been dealing with it early on, until really until the work of Regula Qureshi and the work of Peter Manuel in the late, you know, in the 80s, was how classical Hindu music works, raga, tala, improvisation, these kinds of things. Not really dealing with the fact that much of this is, at least in the South, is Brahminical Hinduism, and who are those people that we're working with, our gurus, that they are often very orthodox people. What are the lyrics that this music is supporting? But most of the dissertations and the few manuscripts that came out were really just dealing with how the music works, not its emphasis as religious music and as a whole social system of religious music, and really Brahminical orthodoxy, the temple complexes, that kind of thing. Whereas many of our colleagues in religious studies were dealing with those kinds of issues. We couldn't question the guru. We could only, you know, talk about how the music works. So big shift happened really in the 80s and now in the 90s. We weren't dealing with the religious aspects because that would have meant dealing with issues of caste and all of that. So Bonnie Wade's work on images of Mughal images, the Ragamala painting started to change that. Her wonderful work, Regula Qureshi's work all along, and, you know, heavy influences from Marxism in her work too, and the dynamics between the Muslim and the Hindu contributions to Hindustani music, and Regula really bringing out the sense of orality in the Muslim practices, the Muslim contributions to that, was so significant. And then Peter Manuel's work on religious, on cassettes and religious light music, and the way that it was able to be perpetuated in a really interesting way through the cassette industry, is really interesting contributions. But Christianity, Islam too, it was really a Hinduism dominated kind of practices. We weren't dealing at all with Christianity. We weren't dealing with tribal religions or the village Hinduism. There was all these basically minority groups, but really majority populations. Now we have Judaism in India. We have some work on Parsis, this kind of thing. So there's a lot more diversity of religious groups and those power dynamics, et cetera, that are going on in South Asian studies.
So perhaps while we're going down the line, in one sense I'd like to speak to Judaism, but in another sense I also want to kind of do a little gadfly-y thing as well, which is to say, when we're talking about the contribution of ethnomusicologists to the study of religion, I also want to turn the discussion around and say, in fact, to look at the idea of religion as, in fact, one of the key motivations for what eventually becomes the study of ethnomusicology. And it's important to keep in mind that some of the very early studies that we're looking at are studies that are sometimes addressed as those studies that have become foundational or became the studies against which we then have to respond, are studies that are often associated with this urge to take religion to a new location and then be able to learn the culture of that people so that the religion, so that you could then provide that people with said religion. And this is something that I think is really important to see. It does not happen only within the Christian world. It also happens within the Jewish world. There are lots of stories of, and in fact, travelogues of, for example, people who are trying to look for exotic Jewish communities who listen to their songs and often will talk about them in very exoticized terms, and likewise from other perspectives as well. But I think it's important to keep in mind that really one of the key bases here is that the sense of one religion or a religious lens onto the very concept of music is one that in many ways has motivated people for a long time. Within the context of Jewish studies, it's a very interesting story, at least as I see it, in that much of the discussion really associates with a couple of dualities. One of them, a duality between the scholar and the practitioner. What does it mean to, in a sense, not just embody Jewish music, but also to study what one embodies? How does it mean to be able to not just know this material, but to know it so that you can present it authentically to people who are looking for that authenticity, or for that matter, people who are either a member of your group or who are seeing you as some kind of an exotic individual who can provide them with some kind of a past, in the case of Judaism, where a lot of the time Jews were considered living fossils. In other cases, it's important to look at this from the perspective of the seminary versus the university. Jewish music study has never really disappeared, but rather, instead, if you look at it, it has done a lot of shifting between places where music is seen as necessary for the continuing and for describing and discussing and enriching Judaism, versus a place like the university, where that is at least theoretically seen as not necessarily the first key goal for description versus religious fulfillment. Nonetheless, these kinds of differences continue to be a key part and really a key tension involved not just in Jewish music study, but also in Jewish studies more generally, which came in around the same time as ethnic studies in the mid-late 1960s, and continues at this point to try and figure out where it's going to fit as different kinds of trends in university education move forward. So, you know, part of the fun of it for us as ethnomusicologists has been to try and really scrutinize where the ideas of where religious concepts are coming from, how they are motivating studies, and how they're actually causing people to frame studies in certain ways, and likewise, then who the individuals are, what it means for them to be qualified to be good scholars of this area. Someone like Avram Tzvi Edelson, for example, who trained in a Jewish yeshiva and then trained as a Jewish cantor, and then eventually went to Palestine and then went to the United States afterwards, and in both cases used his background in order to try and promote in Palestine some kind of a Zionist idea of Jewish music, which was based in the Middle East, and then shifting over to the United States, where he again used his authority as a scholar to aim to create a new form of Jewish music for an American populace that was seen as having lost touch with their background or with their religious urges, suffice it to say. And I don't think that we're necessarily too far beyond that at this stage, in the sense of saying that there is a lot of discussion, whether it's above ground or underground, or in front of the conversation or behind the conversation, as to what right an individual has to speak about a particular religious ideology or a particular religious study that they're doing. I'll stop there.
I'll pick up there.
Please.
So in terms of thinking about the story of Christianity and ethnomusicology and how the two have intersected, it's actually a much younger story to be told. One can only start thinking about the anthropology or ethnomusicology of Christianity really beginning in the later 1990s with works of people like Joel Robbins, Tanya Luhrmann, these kinds of people, who, because of Christianity's very tricky implication in the emergence of anthropology and ethnomusicology as disciplines, and the anxieties that Anglophone scholars had about missionization and conversion, and also the sort of too close to homeness of Christianity in a North American or Western European context, it was sort of considered either the taint of those over there whose authentic beliefs and spiritual practices we're really looking forward to. And so literally Christianity is ignored. You sort of like turn off the camera and you turn off the tape when anything Christian is happening because it's not real. Or it's too close to home and too taken for granted, and in a modernist, secular, positivist academy, it's the thing that is epistemologically very problematic before this sort of moment in the later 1990s. So for Christianity in particular, but also I think the ethnomusicology of religion or religious ethnomusicology or however we'd like to talk about it, I think one of the signal contributions is to be even more of an aggressive push away from the religious studies approach to texts and materialities as two of the sort of comfortable, tried and true ways, and the deep connection that ethnomusicologists have had to the sort of sensory turn in religious studies, where we're talking about practice and affect and touch and proximity as equal, if not more revealing, ways of thinking about what how theologies are taking shape and how religion is always something that's entirely local and contested rather than the sort of top-down, traditional, text-based, dogmatic, theological approach. Also, I think in ethnomusicology, if we can think about a sort of post-secular turn where increasingly we have scholars in a broad range of social, scientific, and humanistic disciplines interested in faith as an epistemological basis for scholarship rather than as the sort of the limit to what can be said. When that turn happens, not only that makes sort of local versions of Christianity, whether it's Christian scholars in North American and Western European institutional contexts, or suddenly we can understand now Christianity in its global manifestations as being understandable and always local rather than as this sort of cultural imposition. We also then find the sort of explosive space for ethnomusicology to sort of wrest Christianity from the musicologists and from the manuscripts, mm-hmm. And locate it more in terms of practice and people's lived experiences. And later on, I think, if I can talk again, I'll also talk about how that problematizes this term, which even in our discussions today, this term religion, which we seem to be too comfortable with and having too much of a concrete idea that we think we know what it means when we talk about it.
Can I add something to this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like we're forgetting a whole sector that's right here at home, right here in Indiana. So I would like to evoke the name of Melanie Burnham, mm-hmm. and her fine work in African American studies, and that, you know, so much of the work in African American ethnomusicology has involved religion, involved Christianity in particular, and whether it's popular music and that lack of divide between the sacred and the secular, and the work of Portia Maltsby as well. So I just want to evoke that, and I wish that one of those scholars was with us today. And I have great respect for their work, and there are other people like that have worked on gospel music, et cetera, that voices need to be heard. And, have done so much for us, I think. So I just want to evoke those names.